You're with us for a caller-only hour here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. So we're going to be recalling some of the moments this month where we heard from callers just like you, bringing these insightful questions and sharing experiences, wanting to know more from guests. And now we want to hear about what shows you want us to put together in the coming weeks and months. What's on your mind? What do you want to learn more about? What are your burning questions? What do you think should be getting more attention during the coronavirus pandemic? Join in now on this caller-only hour, 800-642-1234. Let's talk about it. Email your show ideas to ideas@WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So we have Greg in Cottage Grove who's going to start us off on this. Greg, hi.
Well, good morning, Kate.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
I am so glad that you have taken the torch from Joy Cardine.
Oh, thanks,
and,
Greg.
And having the morning show, I think it's great. But program you had about the lady that made the cookware?
Sarah Dahman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sarah Dahman. Now, she's on the internet, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. She was fascinating. We started calling her the cookware doctor around here. She just came out with this book. And as we were talking yesterday after she had given such great advice on the show, we thought, let's have her back and maybe we can delve into some of the recipes that she's pairing with her pieces of cookware and learn more about how we can use the right cookware for certain recipes. What would that sound like to you?
Oh, it would be wonderful. And how to make cornbread in a cast iron Dutch oven.
Ah, yes. Cornbread and brownies in cast iron. That is my, that's where I want to go with it. Well,
with walnuts and stuff in it.
Oh, so good. So good. Well, Greg, thank you so much. You know, we have about 1,200 guests a year. We want to bring some of these great guests back who just, you know, absolutely wow us with their knowledge. So we will make certain to get Sarah back and put it on the list. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, and it's almost like a go-to thing every morning.
Well, so, I appreciate that you put us as part of your morning routine. So, you know, we're going to look a little bit here at the program we've done this past month. And with schools closed, the pandemic impacting at least 55 million students, we said, you know what? They're at home. They could be listening to us. So we have done 3 hours of science programming for kids this month, starting with Doug Peltz. He's known as Mystery Doug by so many kids, including kids in my house. And let's hear a question that Mystery Doug fielded from Bethany in Green Bay.
What's the heaviest animal?
I'm going to double check before I say this, but I'm curious, Bethany, are you still there?
Yeah.
If you had to guess, what would you guess it is?
Maybe a rhinoceros?
A rhinoceros? That's interesting. I mean, one thing that you have to think about when you ask a question like this is, which animals do you have in mind? Are you counting all animals? Or only animals that live on land?
All animals.
Okay, it's interesting. Because if you go with all animals, then you have to think as well about an animal that lives in the ocean. Whales, right? And the largest whale is the blue whale. It's the largest animal on Earth. So I think that if we had to pick one animal to say that, I'd have to go with the blue whale. But that said, as I'm looking here and checking, it looks like the heaviest animal that lives on land, you were close, is an animal that lives in Africa, but it's an elephant.
Ah, wasn't that exchange just melting your heart? Loved it. Loved it. You know, that is an example where we come together and have these conversations with these great guests and now kids calling in. So I just wanted to share what a beautiful moment there. Bring your insights here. This hour is dedicated to you and what you want to bring to the morning show. It's caller only. It's ideas rich. Maybe you have questions you want to explore, stories or experiences you wish to share with fellow Wisconsinites. We're pulling clips to remember this month and What should the morning show cover next month and into the summer months? What do you want to hear? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Aaron now in Oshkosh. Hi, Aaron.
Yes, hello, and good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'll be as brief as possible. Ever since Reagan, we as a people have been spoon-fed this mythos about how capitalism is going to save the world. And it's gone on with documentary after documentary, news segment after news segment. And we've seen, you know, the tenfold condensation of money, both in this country and around the world. But every time we have an emotional an economic crisis, Wall Street bailout, now this COVID-19, they're the first ones to butt ahead in line.
So it sounds like
the pockets with federal money, and they're not presenting a solution. I would like somebody to hold these neocons at pitch.
So, Aaron, it sounds like you're really wanting to focus on shows that look at economics, the markets, Wall Street. And I want to point you to one of our favorite experts, who is financial commentator Patty Hirsch. Now, Patty came on in March, and it was mid-March. And it was right after, news of the stimulus had broke. Americans were finding out how the stimulus was going to work. And Patty is a great, great explainer on things like this. We try to have him back quarterly. And so we're looking at a June date, I'm sure, with him. But, I get that, Aaron, that we have to look at how businesses operate, how our economies are run. I, too, really appreciate shows about economics. So thank you so much for that idea. You can join in with your show ideas on this caller only at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So on the kid thread, a week after Mystery Dog, NPR science correspondent Joe Pelka came back on our program and took a couple questions from Jackson. Oh.
Hi. So I have a question about the masks that you wear. Like, should you wear masks in public? Does it, like, make a difference? Or, like, what's the difference between the N95s and the surgical masks? And do you think that, like, there's any way the virus could have been man-made?
Well, let's answer the second question first. There is some theory that says it could have been something that humans did, a modification of an existing virus. Most scientists discount that. Even if it turns out that it came from a laboratory, they think it was a strain that was collected in the wild and then might have escaped from that laboratory, but they don't think that someone in the laboratory tried to create it for the purposes of making the world sick. So it's probably not something that was made in a lab. Now, to the mask question. Well, the N95 and the surgical masks are very different things. The N95 is really designed to screen out very carefully anything small that you might breathe in. That could be dust, it could be asbestos, it could be a virus or a bacterium. The trick with an N95 mask is it's very important to put it on correctly, because what you want is no air leaking around the mask. All the air that you breathe is supposed to come through the N95. They actually call it a respirator, so that only clean or filtered air comes into your mouth. Now, surgical masks are a different beast altogether. They are usually just made out of some material, cotton or some other material that is intended to screen out some things, but mostly it's to keep big particles from flying into your mouth. I mean, to be gross about it, surgeons wear the masks so that if they're in surgery and somebody starts spurting blood, it doesn't get all over them and they don't wind up swallowing it. So the idea is that, yeah, they have a function, but they aren't intended to block viruses. They can't block viruses. They're not able to filter the air that carefully that a virus couldn't get through. So why wear them? Well, the answer is it will filter out some. So if somebody happens to sneeze at you, it's probably going to stop the bigger particles that are in the sneeze that are carrying the virus. But just as importantly, it keeps you from infecting others. Because if you happen to have the virus, which I certainly hope you do not, I'm confident that you do not, and I'm certain, in fact, the good news at least is that most people do not. But if you do happen to be infected, it prevents you from spraying the virus out of your mouth and getting onto other people. So in a way, it's partly to protect you, yes, but it's also to protect other people from you. And I don't mean to say that you're a bad person and that you have some virus and that you should be masked up. It's just a security thing for everybody in the society, since we don't know who is infected, to take care that we, any of us, could be infecting somebody else.
So there, NPR science correspondent Joe Pelka doing a deep response there to Jackson, a caller. We're revisiting some of the moments this month where listeners like you called in, advanced the conversation on COVID-19. Now we want to know, what should the morning show cover in May? Kids, what do you want to hear about on the show? Who are your favorite people to hear on the radio or to watch on YouTube? What questions do you want to explore? And by the way, next Friday, not this Friday, next Friday, we have author Lauren Tarshis, who is the I Survive series author, coming on for a show and explaining how she does the I Survive series. That's next Friday, May 8th, from 8 to 9. Stay with us. Bring your ideas, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're recapping the month on The Morning Show and inviting your ideas for future segments. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So we discuss all sorts of things here. This is a snapshot of what this week has looked like so far. So far, bugs, politics, unemployment, technology, health insurance, immigration, history, cooking, education, veterans, agriculture, water, and health. So what topics are your highest priority for the program? Do you listen for conversations about politics, about health, education, advice? Is it something else we haven't covered? 800-642-1234. And this caller only, there's room for you. Let's bring in Dave now in Grand Chute. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. I would like to put in my annual plea to bring back the Friday 8 o'clock program where you had somebody from a Democrat and a Republican on.
So you're looking really for a week in review to go through the week's news and get a perspective from someone from a Democrat and someone from a Republican side.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know it's right before the wrap up on point, but mm-hmm. it was a little different angle, I thought, and it was more statewide.
State based.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that. We will put it down here and appreciate you listening, Dave. Let's bring in Sherry now in Madison. Sherry, hi.
Hi. Hey, I would really like to have a program on the science involved with the 5G and all the towers that are going to go up and how it might honestly affect the human body and how it might affect society. And what are the dangers and what are the things that are safe about it?
Okay, so 5G, internet, human health. I see you have some other ideas here. What's your next idea?
Okay, the next idea is to investigate some of these conspiracy theories that are going around the internet and to bring out the truth behind them and maybe kind of give understanding of how these may have developed, you know, how people misunderstood this or that, especially, you know, I think like the one about Bill Gates planning to put chips in the vaccine so that they can track people.
Okay, so digging deeper on some of those conspiracy theories, you know, we're spending so much time online and so much noise out there, so many different things floating around. You know, Sherry, that might be interesting to maybe partner with the Poynter Institute on that, kind of do one of their truth-o-meters and bring in some of the different things that are going on out there on the internet and finding finding the facts about them. So, Sherry, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's go to Russ now in Stoughton with some ideas. Hi, Russ.
Hi. Good morning. My vote to have a return guest would be to have Dr. Zorba Pastor back on the show again, especially in the current environment with the virus and all that. But also, instead of just talking about medical things, I'd like to have him and, if it was possible, his longtime sidekick, Tom Clark, that he appears with on Saturday morning NPR radio shows.
Well, have the whole duo have coffee. Everyone can talk. It sounds like a really good plan, Russ. What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Russ, what do you think of segments where we bring in a physician like Dr. Zorba? Do you appreciate more physician-oriented conversations?
Oh, yes. There is so much on the virus on the radio and TV now. It is, you know, TMI, and, you know, you don't know what to believe. Everybody's got an opinion and a theory, and he has a local practice in Oregon. I think I have a lot of faith in what his opinions are. And if he doesn't really know anything, he won't talk about it. He'll admit it. But, you know, it's scary out there. There are so many pros and cons out there. You know, I value his opinion.
Well, Russ, we value your opinion. Thank you so much for calling in, and we'll be checking in and see what Dr. Zorba Pastor is up to, see what Tom Clark is up to. Thank you so much for that idea. Let's go to Rob now in Madison. Hi, Rob. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. My comment is, we the people at this point can only deal with the problem mostly by testing, so that we the people can see it, the virus. All the blame that is going on only wastes the time we the people need to spend on testing.
So, Rob, I would think that you would want to deep dive into testing, the protocols, where we are at with testing here in the U.S.?
Yes, we can't change what is already there. We can only deal with it.
Well, Rob, thank you so much for that idea and looking into testing. Kathy from Milwaukee called to ask, do they test for the virus when you donate blood? Another great question. So we can certainly have more conversations about testing. And in fact, we'll be having one tomorrow. You can join in with your insights at 800-642-1234. What do you want more of on the morning show? What do you want less of? What are your burning questions that you want answered right now during this pandemic? And who would you like to hear from during the pandemic? What do you think we should do, have programs on? You can call in at 800-642-1234. You can email your ideas to ideas@wpr.org. So we also spoke with animal doctors this month. Joe from Nina had a question about his cat for Dr. Elizabeth Hillebrand, a veterinarian from Northwest Wisconsin.
Yeah, good morning. I have a cat that gets really sick when she travels. I have a house that's about 50 minutes away. About 40 minutes in a trip, she'll start to gag and vomit and everything. I was wondering, has anybody found a way to help that condition? I've tried cages, I've tried all kinds of stuff, but she still doesn't make it, but I've got to bring her on the weekends when I go there.
Yeah, and cats definitely don't take to traveling the same way our dogs do. Most dogs are really happy to hop in the car with us and go wherever. Cats, boy, I don't know, they tend to be like me. I'm kind of a homebody. That being said, though, if you need to take them, I would strongly recommend that you have a conversation about this with your regular veterinarian. Most veterinarians have a few tricks up their sleeves that they can think of. Sounds like you've done some of the let's try and make them feel a little more confident by having them in a nice crate, try different places in the car for the crate, making sure that we're doing routine regular trips, that they realize that they're not not going to end up being left somewhere. Who knows what goes through their brain, but we don't want them to feel like they might be going someplace they don't want to go. Other than that, everything else should really be on a case-by-case basis, and I'd strongly encourage you to talk to your veterinarian about it and see what other kind of thoughts they have on how to control some of that car sickness.
And it is a caller-only hour. We're revisiting, spending the hour listening back to some of the exchanges this month between callers and guests. We're gathering your ideas for future shows in May and beyond. And now we're hearing Love on Top by Beyoncé. The song's chorus is about 20 seconds, or how long physicians urge us to wash our hands with soap or sanitizer. Stay with us. News Update is next, and your insights right here on the Ideas Network. The morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just a quick mention here that WPR continues to bring you the latest on the pandemic with state, national, and international developments with additional coverage from NPR and the BBC. You can find a hive of the latest news and analysis at WPR.org/COVID. So right now we are discussing whatever you want to talk about. It is a caller-only edition of the morning show. We're gathering your ideas up for what to prepare for future programs in May and beyond. Let's take another call now. Lois is joining us from Madison. Hi, Lois. What are your ideas?
Good morning. I was wondering why nobody has mentioned the polio epidemic that existed in this country and around the world. Started in 1916, and they didn't find a vaccine until 1955, and people had to, you know, go in those iron lungs. And I have a, you know, 1952 in the U.S., there were almost 58,000 people in the U.S. that were affected with polio, 3,145 deaths, and 15,000 cases of paralysis before the vaccine was established.
So we could take we could take a closer look with historians, people from the medical community at what happened during the polio epidemic. Great idea. Yes. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. Let's go to Mark now in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks. I listen to you all the time because I'm on the road every day. And a few days ago, you had a doctor from Green Bay on who made a statement that intubation using the respirators was absolutely the wrong way to go, and he talked about the CPAP. You just had a doctor on who made positive statements about intubation, so I'm confused now, and I'm wondering what we really need to be doing with patients regarding intubation or CPAP or whatever. What is the proper strategy?
Yeah, there is so much going on out there about how the treatment protocols are changing, and we are hearing differing information from the physicians who are on. Ventilators certainly front and center in the news. Mark, I think this is a great idea, and I'm so glad you're listening closely to hear those variances as we have on different physicians who are on the front lines of COVID-19. So thank you so much. Appreciate it, and hope you stay safe there on the roads.
Right. And by the way, I think the polio idea is an excellent idea also.
All right. So a second check mark there. Mark, thanks. Let's bring in Randy now in Madison. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. When I was a kid, I read in the 60s and 70s, I read a couple of books that popularized epidemiology. And one writer who, a New Yorker writer who specialized in it, was named Burton Ruscha, or Roosh, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, that he wrote a book called 11 Blue Men, mm-hmm. which was a series of essays, including in the longest one is the title, which is about this outbreak, I believe, in New York City, where the victims turned blue and what it took to track down the cause. The other writer was Paul DeCroup. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say, so revisiting the works of some of these earlier medical writers, I mean, he also wrote The Incurable Wound and The Medical Detective, so there's more to learn from these earlier writers.
Mm-hmm. You've done your research. All right.
Yeah.
Right. And the other was Paul DeCroup, and I think his most popular book was Microbe Hunters.
Mm-hmm. Microbe Hunters. Yeah. And he was a microbiologist, wasn't he?
I don't know. I believe, well, yeah, he was a doc. I guess I remember that. It's been a few years. And I can't even guarantee that either of them are still alive. But if they are, I think it would be edifying to just have them on and talk about what they were doing then and what their perspective is now.
Well, if Wikipedia is telling us the truth here, they have both passed. But it does bear well to me as what you're saying is to look at some of these early works and maybe, some contemporary authors are relying on these earlier works and this type of history. So thank you so much for that idea, Randy. Appreciate it.
Sure. And let me just add quick that in case of Burton Rue, she wrote a lot of things. And so there might actually be somebody available who has written about his writing.
Sure, and has read it deeply. So thank you, Randy, and have a good day. Stay well. So this month, we also talked about the pandemic's toll on all sorts of businesses and community organizations. We had a conversation about museums as well. Greg Vadney, who's the president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums, he joined us for a conversation in early April, and we heard from Michael in Eau Claire.
Yeah, I work actually in the Children's Museum sector of museums, and kind of a neat little fact is that Wisconsin has the most children's museums per capita out of the entire United States. But my question for Greg is, one of our concerns right now, and it really seems that most of the funding support is going to basic needs, which is totally understandable. But I really think in this scenario of a shutdown of our business that those that rely on earned revenue, such as museums like ours, actually stand to probably lose the most because the example that I share is our field trip come up here in April and May, and we actually aren't going to be able to make up any of that revenue. And so we're expecting at least a loss of $26,000 in earned revenue. We're thinking it might be as high as $135,000. And so I'd be really curious to hear Greg's take on that compared to those that rely on contributed revenue. You can really get that revenue anytime during the year, whereas earned revenue, there's certain times of year you can only earn it.
Yeah, and Michael makes some great points. One, he's right that children's museums are plentiful in Wisconsin, and children's museums in many ways are taking that hit because earned income is so important to them. Lets you know exactly what his call lets you know just how devastating this is and the importance of having either a federal or a state backstop for these kinds of museums. There's a little way that they can make up for stuff like this through just the generosity of donors. It is a substantial loss, and it requires action from our elected officials. And that's where advocacy makes sense. Now, when I go and I talk to an elected official, they say, of course, you're the president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums. But when the people out, your listeners, when they talk to their local officials and when they talk about how important museums are to them, it has a great impact. So I really stress it has to be a grassroots effort to make sure that in the next packages of funding, that there is substantial money available for these museums to be able to bridge this gap to be able to get over these enormous losses, financial losses that they're taking on.
So those insights there, Greg Vadney, who heads up the Rahr West Art Museum in Manitowoc, hope he is doing well. Let's go to Scott now in Green Bay with ideas. Hi, Scott.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was hoping you'd have somebody on to talk about the deadly combination of sanctions and COVID-19 with regards to like Venezuela, Iran, and Gaza. Specifically, maybe somebody on from Mint News Press. They've regularly report on these areas. As we know with COVID-19, no country is an island. So as long as this virus exists, it's going to be, likely to come back to our area. Even if we get our stuff down, that's not the end of it.
So international sanctions, international trade, and what is going on with the U.S. on that front and the world is what I'm hearing, Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Venezuela, Iran, Gaza, we cut there.
Yeah. Scott, thank you so much for that idea. Let's bring in Alan now in Cashton. Hi, Alan.
Hello. By the way, I think a show like Car Talk used to be where, they tell about how to fix your cars, people call in, and how to buy new and used cars would be good. And another thing would be have cooking shows, food shows, tell people, this week have, besides your cooking show or whatever. Yeah, I'd talk a little more about that because people are home all the time.
People are home and cooking. Yeah, we had cooking going on in the 6 o'clock hour this morning, Alan, and we had a good time with cooking. On the car situation, are you looking more at fixing cars, or would you like more insights on what's on the market and what's coming to the market?
Well, all of them. Car is one of your biggest purchases in your life, and I think that would be a very good thing on this program to tell people how, or it doesn't have to be now, can be any time, something. And another thing is people are looking for things to do. Maybe you should bring up some crafts and stuff like that,
What are your favorite hobbies?
Well, mine is driving used cars, different cars.
I think I'm talking to a car person.
No, not only that.
Do you fix your cars? Do you fix your cars? Do you go under the hood?
No, I don't fix them. I just drive them. I like to drive different kinds of cars. I'm an older guy now, and that's what I like to do.
So what I heard is cooking. I heard cars. I heard hobbies and crafts. So bringing those types of conversations.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that would be great for people.
Sounds good. Alan,
thank you very much.
Thank you so much for calling in on this caller only. We're collecting future show ideas from Alan and you this hour, rewinding on some of this month's more memorable moments between, callers and guests and just what has transpired. Right now we're hearing music from the movie Rudy, which we played earlier this month during an hour-long conversation about sports. We'll be back in a moment, maybe hear from you on the Ideas Network. We're back with more conversation about the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. So this hour, we're revisiting some of our favorite moments from April where callers like you brought questions and stories to the conversation. We bring on about 1,200 guests each year on the morning show. So we want to know, who do you want to hear from? What are your ideas for future segments? What do you think we should be getting more attention on, putting more attention toward? What do you want people to know during the pandemic? Which segments have you enjoyed the most, the least? Join in 800-642-1234. There's still time to talk. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We heard from Max and Madison, who couldn't stay with us, called in with some show segment ideas. Number one, Max says, look at the positive things that have come out of the pandemic. Rekindling of relationships, learning new things like an instrument. Have a show on the positive effects of the pandemic. Max, thanks for that idea. And certainly that helps lift up everyone's spirit when we hear those acts of kindness from our neighbors in our communities. Number two, Max says, explore the decline of insect species. And number three, a physician to talk about what goes into creating a vaccination. What does that journey look like? Max, these are great ideas. Thank you so much for calling in with them. Mary in Osseo, as well, couldn't stay with us, has some show suggestions. Number one, Mary says, every time a politician calls something fake news, check into it, see what is actually fake news, and wants to hear more programs on economics and on the stock market. Mary, thank you so much for that. You know, financial news, so important right now as we watch the markets day to day. We know economics is infused in every aspect of our life, and as we see the numbers of jobless, certainly those financial segments can help so many people as we look at what's going on. Mary, thank you so much for that. And speaking of finances, we invited a personal finance columnist from the Washington Post to come on, and that was Michelle Singletary, as we saw stimulus checks hitting mailboxes. Here's Rana from Cameron with columnist Michelle Singletary.
Hi, good morning. My question for your guest is, well, first of all, I have to say I'm so excited to get to talk to someone that might help us have a little clue as to what's going on. We paid our 2018 taxes. some years we get refunds, some years we pay in. And we haven't received our stimulus check yet, so I went online to find out why. And it could be because my husband is a veteran, and I have heard that if you're a veteran, I read that if you're a veteran, your information went to the VA. So I'm wondering if she can shed some light into what's happening with the VA process and how that might, you know, work out for us.
Right. So you haven't filed for 2019 yet, correct?
We're just waiting for it to come back from the accountant.
So then that means it hasn't processed. Okay. So in 2018, did you get a refund or did you have to pay?
We paid in.
So that's probably why there's a delay, because the first batch went out to people who had direct deposit refunds. When you pay, they can't use that same information to send you the money. So your money is probably in the process to send a check at this point. If you want to try to put in your direct deposit information, go to irs.gov. Please be careful to type that correctly. It's the IRS website, irs.gov. There's a Get My Payment tool that you can go in, if you can get into it, because a lot of people are having trouble getting into it. If you can get into it, you can give them your direct deposit information. If they have not started to process your check, you can get it into your bank account. If they have, then you'll just get a check, and there's been a wait. I think that's the misunderstanding. When they rolled this out and said, oh, 80 million people got money, so the second half of people, about 70 million who haven't gotten money, are like, well, wait, what happened to me? And when it came to veterans, you know, these systems don't talk to each other, and so veterans were kind of put into the second category. But because you filed a return, you are in a different queue. So your payment isn't sort of based on your husband's veteran status at this point. It's probably based on your 2018 status.
And that was the Washington Post's Michelle Singletary going into the status of stimulus checks there with us. Let's bring in another show idea. Brianne is with us from Plover this morning. Hi, Brianne.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What's your ideas?
So I had actually two parts to my question. The first being, we hear lots and lots of talk recently about how the environmental aspect have been are starting to recover and doing better. I would like to hear if there is any sort of plans to kind of continue that momentum. You know, we got less people driving, less pollution, et cetera, rivers are rebounding. So if that is the case now, what is sort of Wisconsin's plan or private entity's plan to kind of maintain that or build on that, capitalize on that? So that's the first thought I have had.
So the environmental impact of the pandemic, what is happening to our water and air, and what's the plan looking like going forward? Okay, got that.
And then secondly, it seems like all of the news and important news has been focused on the pandemic and corona, but there are other things happening in the world. Mm. It would be great to have a little bit of a broader focus on other things happening worldwide instead of just pandemic news. I mean, we all are very familiar with that status, but, you know, what's going on outside of the pandemic?
Right. What are the specific things that you like to keep tabs on outside of the pandemic? What might be a good conversation to go to?
I'm sorry, I missed the beginning part of your question.
Yeah, I just wondering, outside of the news that you keep tabs on with the pandemic, are there other areas of interest for you that are not specifically pandemic related?
Well, we spent a lot of time living abroad, so pretty much any sort of world news, European news, okay, things happening in Asia not related to the pandemic. And I know it's kind of a niche market how many people spent time living in two different locations, but even stuff, you know, United States based that is not related to the pandemic.
Okay, broaden our horizons a little bit. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Brianne, thank you so much for listening and for contributing. We appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you, too.
Don in Janesville is next. Hi, Don.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind? What would make a good show?
Well, I've just mentioned one, but since then, I want to applaud the lady that just talked. I am right up there with her with, you know, the eco-friendly world and stuff. And my big thing is I'd like to see companies have to recycle their own product that they make and pass that cost on to consumers. If you could find somebody that would discuss that. I just think there's way too much throwaway and too much money to buy this or that. We were just talking about cell phones and how people have 50, 60 cell phones that they just store in their homes. And they just go buy the next one, where if I think we increase the prices and get these people, these companies to recycle their own products. But the main idea I had is I was talking to a friend the other day who worked for Milwaukee School District as a teacher and found out these kids in Milwaukee didn't even get these tablets that these kids are using for education until last week. My concern is, why are some kids in the area had these tablets right away when this all happened, and they were right on board and just stepping up where other school districts had nothing, and why there's such a gap between that, and what are we doing about that? If we could get somebody in the higher education to explain why, you know, let's focus on getting these kids in the level of education more equally across the state of Wisconsin.
So the educational, yeah, the educational divide, how it is being impacted by the pandemic, that is segment idea one, and then recycling and zero waste and initiatives by companies on that idea two. Don, thank you so much. Bill in Florence, you're next. Hi, Bill.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think a good report on the impact of people who do not have, and the amount of people who do not have access or do not have availability to internet. I didn't realize how bad things really were until I couldn't go to the library. And, you know, I used the internet a lot at the library. They're closed to check on any reports, to check on friends, to check on stimulus check, any of that stuff. Everything's like, go, you know, you want to contact us, go online, and it's just, I don't know if they're ever going to have, you know, universal access to internet, because a lot of people in this part of the, you know, upper part of the state can't really afford it, and they're in rural areas.
But the digital divide and the lack of broadband as well. Bill, thank you so much for that idea, and thank you for all your show ideas this hour for the morning show all hour long. Just ahead, it is On Point, and as they're going to be looking at oil prices, prices have plummeted, storage tanks are filled to capacity. They'll be looking at the future of the oil industry. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and it is because of you that this is the Ideas Network.